place for goal and finishes off the PSG victory.
Laissez lancer, Nuno Mendes ravive, Nuno Mendes passe devant Cordano, le tir, oh il est bon celui-là, le but de Nuno Mendes.
Pour le Paris Saint-Germain, parce que le Paris Saint-Germain c'est le plus important.
Il est dans le football,
il est voilé les.
Et je suis fatigué.
Hello and welcome to PSG Review, the show catching its breath after a somewhat breathtaking week, the final stretch of the summer transfer window of 2023, also known as the show who could be telling you, I told you so, about the Champions League group stage draw. None of us are shocked at this point that we end up in the group of death, as per usual, but is there something untoward here or is it just a lack of draw to be the best? You have to beat the best and we have quite a treat in front of us, but let's get into that in a moment. My name is Nikko and you can find and follow the show on Twitter, as I insist calling it, at PSG Review Pod, and on Instagram the handle is simply at PSG Review, and you can also rate, review, star, subscribe, and more than anything else, listen to this show from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or many other podcast platforms, and it's a real joy to have you with me right now. It is much appreciated. I am recording this episode on Saturday, the morning after the deadline day. PSG is also playing tomorrow on Sunday in Lyon, but I thought that there would be so much to talk about already right now that I won't wait until that to include that match in the mix. I hope it's a good one, but what a week it has been, and the transfer window is now finally closed, like I mentioned, and of course we'll look at that in detail in a moment. Quite a deadline day, but another big deal from the last couple of days, of course, is the Champions League group stage draw. The event itself took place on Thursday in Monaco and PSG was in the pot one with the other champions from the main European leagues. Now, as PSG fans, it's pretty much standard practice, tend to expect the group of death in some form or another. These draws, whether for groups or for knockout matches, rarely give us the easy route, and you can explain that how you will. Perhaps we are very unlucky, perhaps it's been rigged, or perhaps we are cursed. Now, I don't know how to rule any of these things out in an infinite universe. I'm not quite superstitious enough to believe in a curse. Not sure if I believe in conspiracy either, because those are not very easy to keep as secrets, although there's been talk about previous irregularities, and in all fairness, football as an organized business exists in such a murky waters that I can't rule anything out. But if we are being punished for something, what is Dortmund being punished for? Or AC Milan? Or Newcastle? I mean, of course, they are now owned by Saudis, but Manchester City is owned by United Arab Emirates, and that never stops them from getting an easier pathway to the spring. But be that as it may, I have inadvertently now already mentioned the group. So with PSG, we have AC Milan from Italy and Serie A. That's a homecoming for both Mike Maignan to Paris and Gigio Donnarumma to Milan, as well as Hernandez Brothers Derby. Then we have Dortmund. Last time we played against them might have been the first COVID match without the fans in an empty stadium. Great memories from that night, of course. And then Newcastle. Paris and Newcastle have some sort of a shared history. We have many players that have played for both teams, like David Ginola. He played for both. Johan Caballé, who works now in our youth system, of course, he played for both teams. Laurent Robert and a bunch of others. There's actually 10 players who have represented both clubs, and they are, of course, in this new era, as well as a club which has started with the new owners and Saudi money. Amazing stadiums, really exclusively great stadiums in this group. And when you look at all the other groups, it is by far the toughest, like by far. There can always be surprises, but we have 4 very good teams here. I feel like with our current setup, we have every chance to win this group. We haven't won the group in 2 years now, and the team can do this. But it will require a lot, and on the other side, not playing well enough will be punished. Essentially, in the Champions League, you have to play against the best clubs in Europe and the best players in the world to win it. So there are no excuses, and if it was very easy, it wouldn't be as coveted, of course. Luis Enrique noted in the club media that the way he looks at it, it's not PSG who is unlucky, it's the teams that have to play against PSG. It's a very good politician's answer, but some truth to it also, of course. My hope had been, if I'm quite honest, that we would have had a little bit easier group, which could have enabled Enrique to hone the system and formation a little, but this is what we have now, and undoubtedly we will have a great autumn of continental football with genuinely rejuvenated squad. You could even call it an overhaul. Out with the old, in with the new. It's been pretty insane ride all the way to the end, and then, just like that, the gates are closed as far as the incoming players are concerned. The summer is over. Eintracht Frankfurt provided us with the real drama that only ended a few hours before the final deadline of this mercato. PSG had been going back and forth with them for a while about the transfer of Randal Kolo Muani, and Frankfurt had valued him quite high, 100 million euros, which I think is a bit steep for him, as good a player as he is, and this was the negotiation that was going on. PSG made reasonable offers to them, not quite what they were asking, but not ones that you'd describe insulting either. Certainly something to have conversation about. And another aspect to this arrangement was Uko Ekitike and would he go the other way. Ekitike was never too keen on Frankfurt from what I gather, and he had his eyes on the Premier League, you know, so much so that he and his representatives had had some extracurricular negotiations there with some teams, and in the end it started looking like without the replacement Frankfurt would not release Kolo Muani. Through all these negotiations about him, they hadn't seemingly worked very hard on finding alternatives, even if some reports suggest that they hadn't been dead set on Ekitike either. But I guess if a good deal was available, it could have been helpful for them too. Randal Kolo Muani informed the world earlier this week that he wants to go to Paris and felt a little betrayed perhaps by Frankfurt, who he felt had made him some promises that with a reasonable offer he is sold, and he felt that they were reasonable offers but the German side wanted more. Kolo Muani had gone on his personal strike after announcing his intentions to apply pressure. Reportedly, he had made his way to Paris to be ready for the medicals and eventual signing of the contract. On Friday, the Bundesliga transfer window closed earlier than French one, so they had no replacement in sight. Ekitike's unwillingness to be pawn in this game did cause a lot of upset for many fans in Paris or for Parisian fans abroad, but personally I think he has, as he should, the full freedom to make the best decision he feels is right for him. Of course, from outside looking in, Frankfurt would have been pretty good option, but my opinion is absolutely meaningless in this, and he felt otherwise, as he has every right to. Personally, I don't have any issues with the conduct of Uko Ekitike, but it seemed like the Kolo Muani deal was collapsing, and that view started to make its rounds in the transfer news. No Kolo Muani for PSG, for now at least, but soon after it was notified that the deal is entirely off, there was a new update. Now Frankfurt wants 110 million euros. It started to look pretty obvious that they were just hustling for the biggest possible amount from their star player. And in the end, in the dying moments of the window, it was reported that PSG had in fact finalized the deal, and not for 100 million plus, but closer to the earlier offer. Some reports say that in the end it was 75 million euros plus 15 million in bonuses, so a combined maximum of 90 million euros. Still a lot of money, but not quite 110 million either. I recorded the last episode a little under 1 week ago, and then I was saying that the Kolo Muani deal looks pretty set, but Bradley Barcola unlikely due to the asking price that Lyon had set. This goes to show how quickly things can change and also how challenging it is to give up-to-date information about all this, because with the transfer window we really exist in a flow of information that much like a river runs forward, and we are in a dinghy without an oar, hoping for the best and trying to react to what is coming. But now the uncertainty is done with, and Bacola file worked out much easier than expected. Lyon didn't demand quite as much, and he was already practicing with the squad on Friday after having been announced Thursday evening. It's quite confusing last couple of days. It all really kind of showed us also how unrealistic expectations we are prone to have about the real-time information about these negotiations and deals. No other industry or area of culture or commerce has the same expectation that the public should know each turn and twist, but in football transfers, in social media, we assume that that's how it should go, regardless of the fact that, of course, clubs, presidents, sporting directors, players and agents are all going through the motions of the deal making. Things change all the time. And it's impossible for any journalist to follow these things blow by blow because they are not in the room. And then you also have many chances who are happy to throw in all sorts of rumors, whether they are real or not. It was just now reported that Fabrizio Romano is officially ranked as the first for the most influential accounts on Twitter, ahead of everyone else from all areas of life, from influencers to artists, film stars, anyone. That really goes to show the momentum that this thing has. And Romano, for the most part, is, of course, very trustworthy, even if he got the Mbappe deal completely wrong a little over a year ago. But for the most part, he's on the money when it comes to these things. And his catchphrase is the one that we are all waiting to hear. But with his success and success of many other journalists like him in France, there are also many good ones who have their tabs on the French football and footballers. But there are also many accounts who just sort of follow the trend, who just don't have the same contacts or whose contacts are more limited. And we must also remember that the details of these deals move and change all the time. So it's not about having one bit of accurate information, because as true as it might have been a minute later, it could have already changed. There are also a lot of accounts online that are more like news aggregators, ones that don't necessarily do their own original investigation or journalism, but they're very good at relaying the information, collecting it, and sort of like contextualizing these different events, deals, news, and other things. And we really have some great ones for PSG online. I really appreciate them for a lot of the information that is made available. You know, sometimes though, it happens that we have all of this information, but it's all kind of same information, perhaps reworded or repeated, and the context suffers a bit. Perhaps it wasn't just clear to begin with. Like with Colomwani deal, it's a very good example because it was really impossible to know if Hugo Ekitike was part of it or not, and the suggestion that he played a key role in the deal but was reluctant to play along caused a lot of damage to his reputation, which of course he did not deserve. But with all that said, it's a ride like a roller coaster, and you have to approach it like that. Patience is needed because the deals aren't done any quicker by constantly asking. We all, and I include myself here, become like the kids on the backseat demanding to know if we are there yet, how much longer to go, and we repeat those questions every few minutes. It's a summer tradition, and I'm just so relieved that we are now on the other side of it. But what is nice about these last two deals, Barcola and Colomwani, is that both players, French as they are, wanted to join PSG, and they didn't want anything else. That's a quite good indication of the pull factor that we have among these young players, and it seems clear that especially Colomwani's stand that he took was effective, and it pressured the deal to go through. The squad is now ready for the season, or at least until January, which admittedly is usually quite a lot slower business month as far as new arrivals or even departures go. And what a window it has been. I'm old enough to remember late June, basically only a few months ago, when large chunks of PSG fan base, at least online, was struggling with the idea that there were no announcement or officially confirmed deals. But as soon as we entered the new financial year in the beginning of July, the announcements were plentiful. An unusually large number of incoming players, and they were announced pretty much one after another in a lead up to the start of the preseason, which also had its excitement as the brand new state-of-the-art training center in Poissy was hosting the team for the first time. After the chaotic last months of Thomas Tuchel in the autumn of 2021, after the fairly uninspiring 1.5 seasons with Mauricio Pochettino barely managing the club, and after the solid start 1 year ago, which miserably fizzled out in the spring of this year with Christophe Galtier, there was a new coach in town. Luis Enrique had a half a year of downtime after his job as the coach of the Spanish national team came to an end after a disappointing World Cup. And I must say he wasn't my first choice, even if he was ahead of other rumored candidates such as Jose Mourinho. But at the same time, he is a seasoned manager and one who knows a thing or two about attacking football. Our attack had been purely relying on individual moments of magic for a few years, and It was a method that worked surprisingly well, it has to be said, but in the end it just was not enough. So once Lionel Messi was out of the door, Neymar's future looked uncertain, even if he seemed to be staying for the time being. But we know he is prone to missing almost half a season, almost every season, and even Kylian Mbappe announced via press that he has one foot out in the absence of accepting the optional season of his contract and refusing to sign an extension. Some good attacking ideas were definitely needed. So far, so good with Enrique. I have been very happy with his ideas and what he has gotten out of the squad in the early match days of this season proper. But it wasn't just the gaffer. Milan Skriniar was announced soon after, and he has brought a lot of experience, calmness and quality to our backline. He hasn't, of course, yet been tested like he will be later on, but it seems that he has been able to put his injury behind him, and he is, of course, fairly unquestioned starter of this team. And there aren't even that many of them, but I feel like he is one of them. After that, Marco Asensio's arrival was formalized from Real Madrid as a free transfer. He has had a good start if he can play in his best position as false nine. He came as a free agent, like said, on top of the fact that Enrique knows him from the Spanish national team. He has also some very valuable big match experience, which may come in handy later on. How will his final contribution for the club be? It can go either way, really, which I guess is true with every player. But so far, I don't have any complaints about him. The third signing of the summer was perhaps the one that in the long run will change everything. Uruguayan Manuel Ugarte was signed from Sporting in Portugal, and as a defensive midfielder, his profile is the one we have been desperately lacking. His start in Paris and impact on this team have been immense, and I'm very happy to have a player like him. Kang-in Lee is our first ever South Korean player in Paris. He has played a lot out of position. Well, in fact, he hasn't really played a lot because he has been injured almost ever since he arrived with a few different things. So we haven't really seen him yet, and certainly not in his essence, in his best position. And I hope that we will get to see that and these injuries don't become bigger problem than what they are. But he is an exciting talent as well. Difficult to say much more than that with these minutes. The fourth new player to join us this summer was Lucas Hernandez, a French national team player and a World Cup winner who came from Bayern. His loyalty with his hometown team Marseille was a bit of a question mark, as was his injury history too, but so far he has been nothing but professional and one of the best performing players for the team. A really solid addition because he's also able to fill on the left side of the defense in the absence of Nuno Mendes, but also play more centrally and bring some speed there too, because not all of our center backs are the fastest players, and especially with Ligue 1 trademark counterattacks, that is a skill that is very much needed. Young Senegalese Italian Shendur had an interesting preseason. I like him a lot because not only does he bring some size to our midfield, but he's very technically able with a good eye for a progressive line breaking passes. So far he has not played yet in Ligue 1, but I am sure he will get his chance. Next up, backup keeper Arnau Tenas from Barcelona. Time will tell what kind of role he will play in the story of this club. And while the midfield and attack has been strengthened, even that long missing number 6 role, it was time to fill another blank. And that was a pure target player, a number 9, a real striker. And despite him not being able to score so far and being injured, even if not very seriously, I'm very happy about Gonzalo Ramos, who joined us from Benfica. An incredible striker who I'm sure will score many goals when he gets in the full swing of things. After Ramos, the long-talked-about deal with Ousmane Dembele was finalized. He became our new number 10, and now, like said, even Randal Kolo Muani and Bradley Barcola have joined us. Let's also not forget one of the most important signings of this summer. I dare to predict that is Xavi Simons, who made his return to Paris only to be loaned out for a season to RB Leipzig. In short term, he isn't here to help us, but next season I expect him to be a key part of this team. Elche Daipi Chiapu left to Leipzig also. That was a sale. Junior Dina Ebimbe's loan deal became permanent deal with Frankfurt. Abdou Diallo moved to Qatar. Timothy Mbembele was sold to Sunderland. Deji Gassama was sold to Sheffield Wednesday. Juan Bernard was loaned to Benfica. Colin Dagba was loaned to Auxerre. Lucas Lavallier, Ismael Garpia and Noah Lemina also left on their respective loan stints. And of course, the big one, Neymar, who went to Saudi Arabia. this summer has also had some other goodbyes. Of course, Lionel Messi and Sergio Ramos left in the end of their contracts. Leandro Paredes was sold to AS Roma, who also loaned Renato Sanchez. Mauro Icardi finalized his move to Turkey, and it seems like at least Wijnaldum and Draxler could still make a move to the Arabian Peninsula. The latest news actually is that Wijnaldum is leaving for around 10 million euros, so that will be a nice bonus for the books, but we are still waiting for the final announcement. But it seems as good as done at the moment and could easily be in the back by the time you are listening to this. Someone's still missing. Someone very dear to me, Marco Verratti. His destiny is still a little bit uncertain. There are rumors that he would be going to Qatar. Previously, of course, there was also interest from Saudi Arabia, but as I'm recording, nothing is particularly set in stone. Could he stay? Would he still be part of the project? Does he want to be part of the project? And does Luis Enrique want him as a part of the project? You know, chances are that the answer to all those questions is no. But after the week we've just had, nothing is certain. The transfer window is now closed for us. That has been established, but in Qatar it ends on the 18th of September and in Saudi Arabia it closes a few days later on the 20th. So while we can't buy any more players, we can sell them to those leagues. I must say I have seen some other dates too for those deadlines, but as I double check them online now, these are the ones that I got. So I'm going to go with them. It has been a busy summer, a real overhaul, and the fact that none of these deals have been the storyline of this summer just goes to show the level of Kylian Mbappe and his position in this football world. After a long summer of uncertainty, he is now staying for at least one more season. You know, might as well, this team is almost like a tailor-made for him. Is that too much power for one player? Well, yes, obviously, but I would say that this has been a really good transfer window, and whether he stays in a long run or just for a year, the squad is now more forward-leaning than it has been in many, many years. And the rumors at the time of recording suggest that he is close to signing an extension with Paris, and that might mean that the next summer he will go, but if he does, the club will make some money out of that move to balance the books, or then he stays for longer. Some things, they never change. It's also good to note that last summer there was this idea of ending the bling bling, as it came to be known, the types of signings we had grown used to, the big names to sell the shirt regardless of how well it all functions on the pitch. And also the idea was to Frenchify the team to get more young French players. Well, French players, but I think also especially young French players. And earlier on this summer in June, it seemed very much for a brief moment that maybe our one and only regular player in the national team, Kylian Mbappe, was on his way out. And we have, of course, Presnel Kimpembe too, but he has been unavailable for long and still will take some time for him to be in full effect and to then enter the tough competition in the French national team backline, which is pretty stacked. So there was a chance that the biggest club in France would be incredibly underrepresented in Les Bleus. But this summer has fixed that with Lucas Hernandez, Ousmane Dembele and Randal Kolo Muani, which is a wonderful advantage for the national team. Of course, before the Euros next summer and the Kylian Mbappe is staying, that's one of the most important things for us and, you know, perhaps even for them, because the attack can really work together for a whole season. And then, of course, we also have Bradley Barcola and Warren Zaire-Emery is selected for the under 21 squad, which is now of course managed by Thierry Henry, and that will form the basis of next summer's Olympic Games team, which are of course played also in Paris. PSG women are working on their preseason and hopefully working on getting further reinforcement to the squad. But with the returning World Cup players, they did beat AC Milan in the final of Amos Women's French Cup. It's not real trophy as such, but if you participate, it's nicer to win than not to win. A real test starts in the 10th of September with Trophée des Champions against the arch rivals Lyon, and after that, 1 week later, Division 1 D1 campaign starts in Bordeaux, followed up by another match against Lyon on match day 2, although there is an international break between those. But the women's transfer window closes on 20th of September. Still need for more players. That is all for now. PSG men will also be playing against Olympique Lyonnais. That's tomorrow as I record, but who knows if you are listening to this only after the match and know more about it than I do. Quite frustratingly, I must say, an international break soon after that, directly actually after the Lyon match, and that will disperse the squad around the planet for a few weeks. Ligue 1 will be back on 17th of September when we host Nice, and a few days later on the 19th of September the long-awaited Champions League campaign starts also at Parc des Princes as we face Borussia Dortmund. A very small break in between those two very important post-international break matches. I do wonder if the Nice match would be moved round to Friday or Saturday still, or perhaps we will just soldier on. At least we have the depth of one, so not everyone will have to play every minute of every match. This is PSG Review. My name is Mikko, and online I am at PSG Review Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You will find me as at PSG Review. These handles changed quite recently, so make sure you follow them and rate, review, subscribe, and keep listening. Until next show, take care. We can talk online, and thank you for being with me for this moment. Peace.